The Magic Book Club with Elizabeth Shaw Biscuits. Available in Tesco and Sainsbury's now.
Hello, I'm Tom Price. Thank you for downloading the Magic Book Club. On the show this week, we have got Susanna Constantine, aka Susanna off of Trini and Susanna. And she has written her first ever novel. And frankly, it's fab. So, hello and welcome to Magic Book Club. I'm delighted to be joined on her publication day, believe it or not. Susanna Constantine, welcome along to Magic Towers. Finally, you've dropped that Trini lady. Well done there. Congratulations. It's just... Oh, dead weight. She was dead weight.
She was dead. She was dead weight, but actually slightly lighter than me. So I was more of a dead weight for her.
When you're doing all this stuff and you're talking about the book and you're doing the interviews, do you miss having her next to you, or is it quite nice to have the limelight for a sec?
Trini is a talker. There is no doubt about it. But yes, no, I do miss her. And we had such an amazing time together. And, you know, doing the book publicity has been not as relentless as it was when we were doing TV. So when we were doing TV, it was great to have someone to, you know, hold your hand. And we were, especially when we were starting out, you know, it was quite terrifying, the whole thing. But
and could you go into interviews and just say, all right, you just, I'm really tired.
Yeah, I'm just, or with my case, it would always be, I'm so I just can't talk. I can't. The amount of times I pretended that I'd been violently sick because I'd had a stomach bug because I had such a hangover.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Was the whole Trini and Susanna thing quite rock and roll then?
It was a little bit rock and roll. Yeah, not anymore though. I don't drink alcohol anymore. But yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the book, After the Snow. Mm-hmm. It's out now. If I call it a Christmas book, is that annoyingly sort of pigeonholing it for you?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It's set at Christmas, though.
It is set at Christmas, but that's really, you know, it's the snow and there's reference to some Christmas trees, and the story opens with this 11-year-old girl, Esme, opening up her stocking. Which is filled with bizarre contents wrapped mysteriously in wet towels, and this is an indication of things aren't quite right at home.
No, because there's this thing. It's beautiful. The surroundings are beautiful. There's castles and the food is. There's a sort of a sense of opulence there, but this theme in the middle of it is bleak.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly right. It is a beautiful setting that is rotten to the core. So, and it's, you know, in that sense, it is the dirty side of Downton, if you like. It's how things were, especially at that time. You know, the aristocracy had not moved on, and although the world was moving on and you had, you know, Enoch Powell and his Rivers of Blood speech because the immigration was starting, the aristocracy lived in this bubble of, you know, still kind of leveraging off their past heroics of their past ancestors and everything, and really were incredibly irresponsible about the present and gave no thought to the future whatsoever.
And so, emotionally, that inflicted a lot of damage because there's a lot of repression going on. There's... Mm-hmm. You know, this chimed with me a lot because I'm not going to go into any of that now. But when I was a kid, there were various members of my family, there were issues, there were problems, and all the adults would do, and you've written this book from the point of view of Esme, all the adults would do is make up lies that you could see straight through.
Yeah, you could see. No, that's right. You could see straight through them, but you would quickly whitewash them over and think, okay, I'm going to believe
them. She's such an optimist.
I know, she is. Oh. Esme is an optimist, and... You know, she escapes into her imagination because that's the one place she feels safe, and there she can have the perfect mother and, you know, the perfect life. And that's where she goes to, which I think is relevant to every child that has, a difficult upbringing.
Are you in this book?
Yeah, my mum was manic depressive, and I lived in the countryside, but that's where the similarity ends.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And that must have been very, very hard then. So you must have really drawn on that a lot for this book.
You know what? It's so interesting, Tom. I drew more from the memories of growing up in the countryside and the joy and freedom. And... No, when I look back at my childhood and my mum, I don't, you know, I just remember the good stuff. And I think I've been so lucky to have come out with tremendous emotional strength. And I think I wouldn't have done that had my mum not had this mental illness.
And do you think that's happening to Esme in this book as well? She's actually becoming stronger.
Yeah, she's slowly becoming stronger. And I think, you know, there will be a sequel to this. And it's going to move into the 80s and she's in her 20s. Mm-hmm. And the strength that she's doesn't draw from so much, but is inherent because of that upbringing, will become apparent.
So is this quite therapeutic for you, Susanna, to do this?
I don't know. Well, writing is therapeutic. Mm. It doesn't really matter what I'm writing about or, you know, writing a letter. As long as it's not an email or work-related, I love to write. And it's not, you know, I sit and write and it's kind of almost like creating a bit of sculpture. I love manipulating words and, you know, everything has to be perfect in my mind. Clearly it isn't because I had to do 3 edits on the book. But, you know, is as perfect as it can be as I go along. And I get such a sense of satisfaction from doing that.
Talk to me about that process. We don't talk about that enough, I don't think, when writers come in here. When you get, you've done your first draft and you go, "This is, I've nailed this."
Yeah.
"This is absolutely in. They're going to love this." And you get that email back going, "Well, this is awful. We can't publish this." Yeah. Well, how do you... You have to be very robust.
You know what? I think you have to have humility. And you know, this is my first novel. I never trained as a writer. I didn't go to university. I barely had an education. And my editor, the main editor I had, is young enough to be my daughter. And
name your editor. What's her name?
She's called Charlotte Marcel, and I love her. Okay. She's amazing. But you know what? She knew more than me. And so I had to take that on the chin and think, okay, this is a learning process for me. It's my first novel. I've got another one in the bag. And, well, you know, I've got a publishing deal for the next one.
Right.
And I have to learn from this.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, humility is a big thing.
What does she change? Does she change plot? Does she say, "No, Esme wouldn't do this now"? Or does she change sentence structure and tone? What is it that she goes in at?
No, it's not so much... Well, for me, I think it's different for everyone, but for me, it wasn't so much sentence structure. And it wasn't tone. Right. I loved the tone and the voice.
Yeah.
What the biggest thing was that when I first wrote, and, you know, I really didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
But... it was, you know, I had the kind of adult perspective and I was told everything has to be from this 11-year-old's viewpoint. And that was so hard to do because I had to, you know, have these adult themes to write about through Esme's eyes, but retain her innocence at the same time.
Mm.
And that was really... That was difficult. I found that very hard. But, you know, and so when you read, it's like my son, he read it. And he actually wanted to read it, which was quite extraordinary. He's 18.
Can you imagine, no offence, Susanna, but imagine an 18-year-old boy sitting on the tube with this book in front of him.
I know, After the Snow.
What are you reading there, mate?
Yeah.
So, yeah, After the Snow, it's an emotional voyage of discovery. It's got ponies in it, leave me alone.
And he was like, "Well, Mum, you know, it's quite childish." And he got to page 60 by this stage. And I said, "Well, that's sort of the point, you know, it is seen from a little girl's eyes." And he said, "But... So it's a bit like To Kill a Mockingbird." And I went, "Okay, I'll take that. That's fine. Thank you very much."
That'll do nicely.
So I think, you know, one of the things I love about After the Snow is that I think different ages see different things in it. So, you know, I have my 13-year-old daughter, 14-year-old, sorry, Cece, who reads it. And she sees it from, you know, the ponies and the adventure and the, you know, driving
friendship.
A car and the friendship, her best friend. And like Esme, will whitewash the kind of depths of, you know, the sort of darker side of the story, and then you'll get an adult who reads it and sees it. Or there might be, you know, someone who's never come into contact with mental illness of any kind, and that might, you know, that side of it might go over their head.
That is something which resonates a lot with me at the moment, because we are all talking about that as a society at the moment.
Yeah.
Loads. The mental illness thing is, and that can only be commended.
Mm.
So this is set in the late 60s.
Mm.
Surrounded by people who were, by their nature, with a small c, conservative anyway. Mm. So they were extra specially repressed. Mm. How do you get angry? Do you get frustrated about it? And do you feel like this is what happened to my mum when she was ill?
Mm.
People around her brushed it under the carpet.
Mm. I mean, that was very much the case. And, you know, I get angry. The one regret I have is that I didn't know then what I know now. And I was never in a position to be able to help my mum. My father was in complete denial about the whole thing. It wasn't talked about. It was brushed under the carpet. You know, if she was having a manic episode, she would be left at home. She never had any psychotherapy of any kind. It was just chuck more pills at her. Yeah. And lithium was, you know, starting to be used then. And there wasn't, you know, manic depression, the term manic depression really wasn't used much until the 80s. So, you know, if she'd been around and had been as bad as she was in the 50s, she would have been put in an asylum.
Yeah.
You know, that's, and, you know, she went through electric shock treatment. And I mean, it was horrendous, you know. And
it's
the shame around it as well.
It's the shame. It's the way people feel.
God.
Like the church scene on Christmas Day when they come in late and they don't get a seat in the pew that they want to get, and you feel that community. And it's all, you know, no matter what social class you're in. This is obviously all set in the aristocracy and stuff. But no matter what social class you're in, it's all about your community and what your community think of you. And in that moment.
The shame. Well, especially from the father. I mean, Esme doesn't really mind, but the father, her father, is a, you know, terrible snob. And, you know, the mother, Diana, Esme's mother, really is his wife because she's a beauty. So it's almost like she's another acquisition. You know, he loved beautiful things. And Esme's mother, Diana, is almost like another acquisition. And the fact that she's damaged, it's the shame of taking her in there. But not wanting to go without her because people would say, well, where is she?
Yeah, what's wrong?
One
of the other things you write about a lot in the book, which I really liked, was there's lots of dogs. I mean,
yeah.
anyone who listens to Magic Weekend Breakfast will know that I talk about dogs. Pretty much every other link is what I talk about. That must have been a pleasure for you to bring them to the page.
And that dog, Digger, is actually based on a dog I had called Archie, I remember he became quite famous because he would take himself for a walk. I'd open the front door. This is when we lived in London. I'd open the front door, completely illegal. And he'd go off and take himself for a walk. And we lived very near Battersea Park. He'd go to the road and he'd sit at the zebra crossing and wait for cars to stop and then cross and go into the park. And he was amazing. And he would come, he came to rock concerts with me. He'd lie out, you know. We were renting a house up in the countryside, and my husband and I had gone, well, as a family, we'd gone away, and he was staying with my parents, and the house that we were renting was about 10 miles away.
Right.
And he ran away from my parents' house and he found where we were.
How did he do that?
I don't know. And then 10 another
miles?
Time. Yeah. And then another time when
you
we
must
were...
smell very strongly. That's the only thing I can think. That's
He's
unbelievable.
Archie the magic dog. So that's Digger, Digger the dog in the
that's
book.
That's who Digger's based on.
Yeah.
Sadly, Archie disappeared. We never found him. He got lost. How long did he make
He's
it to?
He's God's dog now. He was 17.
70's amazing. That's a great innings for a dog.
He's an amazing dog.
So when you're writing, how did you find that? How did you find the, you know, you don't get to sit, because you've written books with Trini before, obviously. You don't get to sit with your friend and write the books now. You've got to sit by yourself, get on with it. What'd
I mean,
do?
With the books with Trini, I never wrote them with her. She produced them and did all the pictures and did all that side of thing, and I did the writing.
So you're quite disciplined, are you?
No, I'm
right.
not. But I'll write on my emotions. So when I want to write, I will write, and that might be it. I might wake up in the middle of the night and suddenly have an idea and go down and write, or I might get up early in the morning quite often, or I'll write through the night, and then I might not write for a week. So I have no discipline.
You're describing the manic episodes to me now.
Oh,
that's what I'm
God,
hearing.
No, don't say that. That's
Sorry.
My biggest fear.
That's true, though. But the idea of someone getting up in the middle of the night to write a story.
Yeah. So, you know, and then when I got the publishing deal with HarperCollins, I then had to take it more seriously.
Yeah.
And then I was more disciplined and I went down to Cornwall. And I'd love the isolation of writing.
So it's a good landscape muse, Cornwall.
Yeah,
isn't it?
But I also find trains and aeroplanes great places to write too.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's sort of tea on tap and you're alone but not alone.
Yes.
Quite nice.
Alone but not alone. I like that.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to Esme in the next few books? What's the plan?
Esme is going to be living in London, and she is going to be training as a picture restorer.
Right, okay.
In the next book. And then in the third book, she will be married with children, and it will be how a relationship with her gay best friend impacts her family.
Okay.
So the darker side of me and my gay best friend.
There you go. Interesting. Mm. Interesting. All right. And let's just do these questions, which we do on every single episode. So you have managed to find 5 minutes of peace. Susanna Constantine, congratulations.
Thank you.
You're about to do some reading. Where are you? Where's the perfect place to do this reading?
At the kitchen table with a cup of tea.
Okay, very good. All right, mm-hmm. You've answered one of the other questions there, unwittingly. Mm-hmm. Okay. What are you reading, please?
I am reading A Little Life by Yana, and I can't remember her. I can't pronounce
it's
her surname.
Yeah, it begins with a K, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Is it good? Because I've not read it. I've got it on my list.
You will either love me or hate me for recommending it.
Okay, fine.
It is the most harrowing read, but you get through it because the prose is so exquisite.
Well, if I hate it, I will be like Archie the dog, and I will find you, Susanna. I will find you. What are you? You got a cup of tea on the go? What are you eating?
Maybe nice biscuits? Usually Twiglets.
Twiglets.
Twiglets with peanut butter and cheddar cheese.
Really?
Such a great combination.
How pregnant are you if you're eating that? It's extraordinary.
My ovaries died a long time ago.
Along with Archie. And what music will you be listening to?
I'll be listening to...
Apart from Magic, obviously.
No, I'll be listening to Elbow and John Grant, Kindling. I did the audiobook. I read the audiobook. And I came out of the studio and I was just sitting down and this man came towards me. And it was Guy Garvey. I just stood up and I went, I'm really sorry, but you've got no idea how much in love with you I am. I love you so much. This is how much I love you. After you won the Mercury Prize, I cut out your photograph from the cover of Q magazine and I wore it around my neck for 10 days when I was filming.
And Guy didn't say a word. Yeah. And then the security stepped in.
I got a photograph of me and Guy.
Seriously?
Yeah, I love him.
Susanna's reaching for her phone. You can just see it's a picture of you and Guy and the security guards peeling you off him. Looks lovely. Listen, Susanna, After the Snow is out now. Happy publication day.
Thank you.
I wish you all the best with this series. And please come back when you do the next one.
I will. I'd love to. You're amazing. Thank you.
There we are. The lovely Susanna Constantine has now left the building. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to hear some other episodes, we've got Dawn French, Richard Branson, some other wonderful writers. Go over to magic.co.uk and you can find all of the episodes there. And make sure you tune into Magic Radio every weekend from 6 a.m. to listen to Magic Weekend Breakfast, hosted by some guy called Tom Price.
The Magic Book Club with Elizabeth Shaw Biscuits, a blissful combination of chocolate, biscuit, and chewy caramel.